Do. Welcome to a special edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Chief Keith Fleming. With me, as always, the dynamic duo that makes us the fantastic trio. First, ravishing Ron L. Tinsley. What's going on, Ron L.?
How you guys doing today, man?
And fresh off getting a California driver's license, Sam the Shooter Howell. What's going on, Sam?
I'm just enjoying another day in paradise.
What's the weather there?
It was in the 70s today.
I hate you. It's been miserable.
Yeah, I really hate you.
Like, miserable. We haven't got above like 52 in almost 2 weeks.
Man, listen, when I got in the car this morning to drive, it was 24.
Okay, it ain't that cold. But I don't live up north either. We're doing this special edition because I think I can say this safely for all three of us. There was a pretty good pay-per-view last night for NXT, the War Games.
I mean, I thought that for NXT, takeovers are kind of like pizza and sex. They're still good. Oh, and breakfast burritos. Breakfast burritos, pizza and sex. Always good, even when they're not that good.
Oh, I love it. One of my dad's favorite sayings, and sorry not to call my dad out on this, but he goes, the worst piece of, punani I've ever got was pretty fucking good. So, amen to that. We'll just go over the card, and then we can kind of get our thoughts out on everything. I love that, you know, it makes a lot of sense they did it the way they did. Obviously, they had two War Games matches, so they started with the ladies. And the entrances were really cool. So we had Toni Storm, Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez, and Candice LeRae battling Rhea Ripley, Io Shirai, Ember Moon, and Shotzi Blackheart were the brand new tank. That was baller. I love the picture that they did, or the pose on the tank. I don't know if you guys caught that Io, I think, got frustrated because Shotzi kept doing a lot of hand motions. And because there was so little, room on the side, she almost got elbowed in the face two or three times. Like some of the facial expressions she was giving to her, don't make me hurt you.
Like, bro.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was a really good match. Maybe a little surprising. I think that the heels not only won, but, me and Sam were talking actually earlier, Ron L., kind of shocking that, Io took the pin. I think that if we had, a scale of, say, if we ranked those participants 1 to 8 and said who would be the least likely to take the pin, you'd probably say that, the champion for the last almost year. But
what's and if I can double down on that, the fact that Raquel Gonzalez was the one that made the pin.
So let's start there then, Ronel. Because I asked Sam this earlier. Do you think that this is signaling that we're heading to the end of EO's title reign? And the second part of that question, is there any chance that they're heading towards Raquel ending it, or is it just maybe to set up a match between the two of them?
I'm thinking that this is just setting up EO's next program, because, obviously coming off of the Rhea match, she doesn't really have her next contender. So this would make for a good one. I'd have a hard time believing that Raquel Gonzalez is going to be the one to take that belt off of EO. I mean, out of all of those women that were in that match, I, like you said, she would be the last person that, number one, you would think would make the pin in this match, and two, even 10 times more, that she would be the one that does it. But hey, wrestling has surprised us in many different fashions before. So, we've seen stranger, and honestly, we've seen worse, because Raquel, honestly, for as big of a woman she is, she's really been impressive to me that she's not just a big woman just to be a big woman.
Sam, here's my question to you on this match. Who was your MVP of the match, performance-wise?
Might go. If I were to choose, I'd have to choose between two. I would say I'd either go Io or Rhea Ripley. Io, just because of the there was that, you know, that the moonshot.
Give it. Go ahead.
And I will. I have to admit something is that I realized later that this was from the Discord chat, with Spandex Orphans, where Rhea does the I'm Io Shirai and this is Jackass.
Love it. Of course, you jump in the trash can. That was that dude. It made amazing.
The most memorable, and that's the most memorable spot in the match. Mm-hmm. I do want to give my like one curmudgeonly old man complaint, which is that I think that using tables and chairs and ladders in a War Games match is putting a hat on a hat. And I don't like.
Thank you, sir.
I think that this is something that all of us as guys who watched.
I don't have a problem with it. I just have a problem with how much they lean on them. Like, it's okay to have an occasional one, but in both matches, they used them so much.
Everybody went for a weapon. And, I had to take that away because I was like, am I going to get on the show tomorrow and just piss on everybody's lawn over? And I'm like, you know what? I mean, I could, but... what would be the real point? Because it would be taking away. There were outside, considering that they brought in all those weapons and not necessarily all of them got used. I can look past that and say that, you know, the matches themselves still were absolutely fantastic.
The one thing that I will say is that I would have been fine with it, but I feel like at one point somebody was like getting walloped with a fucking tire iron. And I was like, wait a minute. Like when they like brought in wrenches and stuff.
And the mallet. Yeah,
the mallet was, it's just, that's ridiculous. Cause it's like.
It was a mini Triple H.
Yeah, she hit her with a mallet like as hard as she could in the ribs. And it's like, I know it's wrestling. We're not going down that road, but it's just like, really? Like we need this? My biggest takeaway, and I know I'm sound like a broken record every time I see her wrestle is just, I can't get over how good Io is. Like, she's just, I mean, I think she may be the best women's wrestler in the world. And I know people get, you know, mad at that with, you know, people like Asuka and, you know, there's some great ones in TNA and I was going to say AEW, but that's not really true. NWA. But Io just, she's just amazing. I mean, she can mat wrestle. She's not afraid to take bumps. I love the physicality that she has for a smaller competitor. You don't see that very often. It reminds me a little bit of Mickie James in her prime, that even though she's smaller, she just seems physical. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get exactly what you mean. And as I'm thinking about it while you were talking there, it's like it's easy to put her in that top 3 to 5 conversation right now. So it's not hyperbole.
I have to be honest with you, the one thing that kind of blew, the one spot that we haven't talked about that like I legitimately was like, oh my god, like legitimately worried for the safety of somebody was that I can't remember what the Ember Moon, the stunner that she does is called.
Oh yeah, on Dakota on the chairs.
Is it like everyone in the Discord chat was like, well, so much for her tailbone, like. I think it's like the Eclipse, but it's
yes, it is. That's what it's called.
And I love Ember. Like I'm really high, but like darling, you just came back from a torn ruptured Achilles tendon. Like you got to stay healthy. And I like hats off. And the one thing that I will say was, and we're, you guys mentioned it, but I do kind of want to defend. I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here because pin thing bothers me more than anything. And the no roof to again be old. I thought that because they couldn't do blood, I get why they have the weapons, but I thought that actually I liked, and we'll get more into this with the men's match, but there was a real, that they were very different War Games matches. And I think that deserves a lot of credit that they had two, you know, it's very easy to have a match that feels very similar. And I'm going to get on Vic Joseph once we get to the men's one as well, but where you have, I thought that the women's match was ultimately more entertaining but that the men's match was a better match overall. But I thought that like there was a real train wreck quality and brutality that War Games is supposed to be.
Do you think, though, the one thing that was lacking from this match also compared to the men's was it kind of felt like an old school Survivor Series pairing where, you know, the heels were just kind of a mosh posh of heels. They didn't really have any reason for being together. The same deal with the faces. And one thing I will give NXT is most of the War Games since they've, you know, redone this, the storylines kind of made sense. You know what I'm saying? For all eight participants, whether it be a faction or a storyline going on. And this one, it did. It reminded me of some of the old Survivor Series where like the Ultimate Warriors with the Rockers, you know, and you're like, what is going on?
Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, again, to not to be, you know, the guy who complains about this stuff, but the problem with having it as a yearly thing.
I'm going to get a t-shirt made for you that says that.
Grumpy old man.
No, it just says that not to be the guy to complain about it, but.
Yeah. but the problem with having Hell in a Cell at the same time is that you end up reverse engineering. And it kind of works. I mean, NXT's done, as you said, really good job of justifying it. I think that they ultimately did a good enough job and the match was good enough that I went past it. But I think that there was, I thought it was interesting the story that they told actually with why they had it. And I thought that more so, I thought that Candace's team did a good job. And I thought that they had enough individual feuds between them that it justified the War Games match.
So one other thing, just because we were discussing this, and I did not hear this, but Wade Barrett said right after the victory that this victory for Gonzalez elevated her from an insurance policy to a genuine threat in the women's division. So the fact that she got the pin over Ia and that being said by the commentator, I think it definitely shows we are heading to her getting a title shot probably somewhere in the near future.
I ain't mad at that.
No, me neither. Absolutely.
I'm not. My only issue is that I, because NXT is the developmental territory, I feel a little more comfortable saying this, is that I think from a storyline perspective, it makes sense for her to win the title, to do the feud with Dakota Kai, where, you know, the Dakota's, you know, has a thing, and maybe even Rhea Ripley turns heel and teams up with Dakota Kai. But I think that the, you know, I just don't think that Raquel Gonzalez is ready to be the standard bearer for the women's division. That's not a knock on her in terms of saying she'll never be there, but I just don't think she is at this moment.
Yeah, I was totally in the same boat. As like, it's not that I don't think, because she's totally, like I said, I'm very impressed with her, and she's going to be a women's champion, no doubt. Just, I just don't think right now.
So the second match on the card, Ciampa. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
One last thing that you said about taking the pinfall was that last year the men's Cole took the pinfall and he was the champ.
That's true. No, I didn't. I was so scared with that Ciampa.
The Project Ciampa.
Oh my God! Amazing.
So I think probably the biggest surprise of the night, at least to me, was the Ciampa Timothy Thatcher match. I did not expect Ciampa to come out victorious in this.
Nor did I.
I thought they'd been building up Timothy Thatcher. I think this, if I remember correctly, is like the second or third big pay-per-view match he's lost in NXT in the time he's been there. I know,
especially coming off of that Riddle.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say. I think if I remember correct, I think he lost to Riddle on a takeover and then beat him on an episode of NXT. And that was kind of Riddle's sent off. I thought this was a really good match. It was very physical, which no surprise. I love Ciampa. I could watch him wrestle all day. I think he's in that class of guys like Kevin Owens and, you know, Sami Zayn, in the sense that like he has both just an amazing character that sticks out, and he also always puts on entertaining matches. And I thought this was a good match. I will go ahead and say, and we'll obviously talk about the next match after, I think it hurt the Dexter Lumis Cameron Grimes match to be third after those two matches, instead of putting it in between them, because I mean, honestly, I thought that was more of the cooler match of those first three, and to go, you know, two big matches and then have it, I think it kind of, you know, hurt them. I know I wasn't as invested, but Ronnell, what was your main takeaways from the Ciampa versus Thatcher match?
Honestly, I was more impressed with Timothy Thatcher in this match than I have been since the Riddle match. I was expecting a lot more back then with that Riddle victory, especially in that pit fight. It was such a well-done match. And I thought that they were going to do a lot more with Timothy Thatcher. And quite honestly, I'm not really feeling his Thatch-Ken school thing. And so I was wondering, like, well, what are they really going to do with him? Because I thought that, you know, with the way he came in, he would have been a guy who could have easily been in, like, the North American title picture. And he hasn't been really delivering. And quite honestly, I was expecting him to go over Tommaso here. Tommaso's, you know, the elder statesman. He'll probably never leave NXT, which is perfectly fine by me. But it didn't really make sense for me for Tommaso to go over here. But it was a really well done match, considering the style that Thatcher wrestles by.
It, you know, it's interesting. Ciampa is only 35.
He does come across as older.
I think it's the gray in his beard. I had the same. No, I'm dead serious. And I think that he, like, some of it is he's also more of I'm trying to think the right way of like the way that his face looks, is that he has more chiseled features. Like he just has. But yeah, I thought the Thatch is Thatch Can. I actually heard a story that, like, that might be based on when he was a trainer in Sacramento, that he apparently, like, his trainees were, like, legit. Like, he made them be able to just shoot and work the mat. But let me ask you guys something. Am I the only one who always forgets that he's not British?
No, because his name is the most British
actually
thing ever.
No. Yeah, I'm always wondering that, and it's like, wait a minute, that's right, he's American.
Yeah, he's from Sacramento. He does, yeah, like the Thatch is Thatch Can too, and like Timothy Thatcher. I'm like, oh, he's British. Like, and I'm like, wait, Sacramento. I think that so it's a really good match. I don't want to. I thought that one of my, like, criticisms is I feel like he's a lesser version of Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak's gimmick. And I think that hurts him.
And they've compared him, I believe, in NXT to those guys.
And that just,
which doesn't
high
help
praise.
Him. Yeah. I mean, it's
like not doing him any favors, I don't think.
Right. I mean, if they wanted to compare him to somebody like William Regal, who,
right, there you go. Or Dean Malenko.
Yeah. You know, but, not in a knock on those guys, but I think that Thatcher is fine. I'm with you guys. I don't really know why he didn't go over. You know, I also am sort of confused on why Ciampa is still in.
Oh, we're going to have another match in a little bit we're going to talk about that we don't understand, you know.
We'll get to that. This was one that just watching it, I was sort of confused on where they're going. I thought it was
interesting. Do you think this proves that Ciampa is going to be like a lifetime NXT guy, which I know he said, and I guess if you are, it's like that is the plan. I guess you do want to save, you know, losses to him so they mean something. Is that maybe, or maybe am I reading too much into it?
Could.
The idea of being a lifer in NXT, especially as talented as he is, you know, I mean, I guess that's saying something though, is that, you know, he and Gargano, it's interesting because he and Gargano are sort of the next generation version of Sami Zayn, like the after Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens left. And it was funny, by the way, Keith, when you mentioned, like, comparing him to
KO and Sami,
Kevin Owens, was that, like, my thought was like, oh, guys who Sam didn't think of as much on the indies as he did. but yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys on that, but I just can't, Like, I feel like it would be a waste of Ciampa, who's just so good.
Like, now, I just, again, he said that he wants to, so it's not like the only reason I think that's even, you know, in play is that he's said several times in interviews that he didn't go, you know, say what I think he was thinking, that I've seen what they do with that, the guys that come up from NXT, I'm happy right here. But you kind of get the, you know, feeling that's what it is. Rhino, you got any final thoughts on this match, or are we going to the next one?
No, we can go on to the next.
So I got to say, I do like Dexter Lumis's character. I know a lot of people, I just want to say, don't have a big opinion about him one way or the other. I'm actually a big fan of Cameron Grimes. I think he's been a really entertaining guy and sort of that R-Truth type, you know, mold where he's funny, he's entertaining, he can actually wrestle. You know, again, very similar to R-Truth. But all I could think about was the strap match between, you know, Cody and, why am I blanking?
Brody.
It just wasn't as good. And again, I think that it was hurt a good bit from the fact of where it was on the card. And also think it hurts that this is the third gimmick match these guys have had, which I don't totally understand. You know, they had the blindfold match. They obviously had the horror, House of Horrors or whatever match. And now to have a strap match. Obviously, it makes sense that, you know, Lumis went over. He's definitely the guy that I think they have more of a, you know, a plan or higher expectations for moving over or moving forward. You know, Grimes is kind of just going to be a good, you know, mid-card guy. And that's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And he's very good at it. But I will say that if you're talking about just match quality, this was probably my least favorite match on the card.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. And quite honestly, and I too love Dexter Lumis's character, but other than the reasons that you stated, like, it was just, there was hardly any real use of the strap in the match either. I get it. They may not have wanted to go over the top with the brutality for a strap match. But if you're going to do a strap match, unfortunately, the strap has to be a big part of the match. And they didn't do that. Like, not even any, like, there wasn't even a lot of leverage things, except, you know, Grimes had the one where, you know, he pulled some from around the turnbuckle into the post. But there wasn't a lot of leverage moves with the strap. The strap wasn't really used to hit anyone. It was barely incorporated into Lumis's finisher after he had already had it all the way wrapped up. So, yeah, it was a lackluster match. And quite honestly, you guys got me really digging Cameron Grimes more than I really was into. Like, Cameron Grimes, he is really, really good. I was kind of hoping that, I was actually finding myself rooting for him in this match.
The other thing that I was sort of shocked by was that it didn't have usual strap match rules. It ended with submission, and like, they're really like the strap match finish that everyone has seen a million times, where the person touches three, not realizing that their opponent has touched three, and then accidentally pulls them in. I get why they might not have, but one thing that WWE has done a good job of doing recently, we saw it with the match for the women, where the face, for the first time ever in a War Games match, the faces had the advantage, is like, maybe just do a different finish, like something to change up expectations. But yeah, I mean, I thought that it was, again, the weakest match on the card, which is unfortunate because I do like both guys. It's interesting how much the injuries affected NXT, because I think that the roster is really much better than it was, you know, a month ago. And I think a lot of that has to do with guys coming back from injuries.
And it's about to get better. I mean, the word on the street is both Finn and Karrion are about to come back. I think that's, you know, I hope that they hot shot right into that program. I mean, they both were champions. They both obviously had to relinquish the title because of injuries. And I honestly would love to see that match. And I really was getting into Karrion Kross's character, who I had no prior knowledge of before he showed up. So I'm hoping that's on the rise. Okay. So the match quality in this next one was good. There was nothing wrong with the match quality, but boy, I think we're going to have some issues with it. The North American title match, Leon Ruff versus Damian Priest versus Johnny Gargano. I think we all discussed this, that going into it, you were either going to have, you know, Leon Ruff completely finish off this, you know, underdog storyline. You know, he had already beat Gargano. He's going to get a win over both of them. He's been doing a great job as champion. I got to give him. I think it's been a great run. Or Damian Priest was going to turn heel, which would make sense because he kind of kept Gargano out of winning the title and win it. But no, that's not what happened. Johnny Gargano won the belt, and kind of even more surprisingly, with the help of Austin Theory, who I was not aware until Sam told me today, the reason he's kind of, or at least partly been MIA, was part of the Me Too, you know, movement. And unfortunately.
Oh, that was that. They're still on that.
There's some bad behavior by.
Or unless something else came out about Theory.
Something that I thought that it had come out when all of it, like when it all.
Yeah, it did. It did, and that's why I thought, like, the initial, you know, going down to NXT and taking a crap ton of losses was about.
So let's start here with this match, Sam. What was the purpose of having Leon Ruff beat Gargano in the first place if we were going back here?
The only thing that I can imagine is that in Triple H, in Vince, in everyone's mind, Leon Ruff, by winning the title initially and then being, you know, hanging in there, got a rub just by virtue of being involved. It's the only thing that I can imagine. I don't know why he didn't win. I also, like, had to make, like, the dismissive wanking motion when Austin Theory, I don't know if you guys caught this, but when he pulled the Scream mask off and said it was me all
along. Yes. I was like, oh, you mother, you... Dosser,
y'all are
you
really should not mad at use me. This. I actually thought that was pretty funny. I got a chuckle out of it.
It was funny, but it was like, no, you don't deserve this.
Like, that was one of, like,
you don't get to use that.
Yeah, like, not. I mean, unless you want to be like, it was something that was really hyped up and ended up disappointing a lot of people, then sure, yes, it was.
Or he should have at least done his best Vince impersonation in it, right?
It was me. By the way, the one thing that actually made me laugh a lot was imagining some panicked WWE production assistant going to every costume shop in the greater Tampa area. All the ghost face masks and good. Like, I know it's not Halloween, but I don't get the finish. I thought it was a great match. Like,
it was really
entertaining. I thought that, and I thought that if Leon Ruff had come out of it with the title, I would have been like, great match.
I was going to be really impressed, especially after getting taken out of the, you know, the whole having to go back to the back and going into the, you know, get looked by the doctor and such. You know, I love that good old comeback story, especially from a little guy like him. I mean, that guy's smaller than me.
So, Ronald, there's some rumblings that, believe it or not, Damian Priest is on his way up to the main roster. And at the end of the storyline, that may be where he goes. Do you think that's a good decision? Do you think he's ready?
Quite honestly, I do. Back before he had gotten that first shot, you know, working his way towards that North American Championship when Keith Lee had relinquished it, I was like, you know, I was happy for him. I've been watching him for a little bit now. And just these last couple of months, even without the North American title, he's kind of just leveling up his all-around game. Like, he's already been pretty, you know, slick talking, but he's getting a lot smoother on the mic. And I was watching his work going between Gargano and Ruff. He's getting well polished in his skill set. So honestly, a call-up wouldn't be a bad thing for him. I just, you know, I don't know how it is for me, because, like, not everyone who comes up from NXT gets that same feel when they first break onto the scene. Because it's like, you know, okay, Damian Priest is a one-time mid-card champion, but who knows? You know, he may get up to the main roster and may get himself in a better situation than other people that we may have thought would do better than he.
One last question real quick. Where does Gargano go from here? Like, I mean, what do you think? I mean, obviously I know him and Candace are going to do a lot of bragging because, you know, she obviously was part of the women winning the War Games match. You know, he wins his belt back. But, like, where do they go from here with Johnny?
That's a damn good question.
I would assume in a feud with Leon Ruff, I think that you can do, you know, maybe Dexter Lumis for the
NA title.
Yeah. The one thing that I will say is one reason to push Damian Priest is he's 38.
Oh, I did not.
Oh, wow.
He looks young.
He's born in September of 82. He's been wrestling since 04. So, you know, you want to get him. And I also think he's a big guy. And I think that, you know, he's 6'5", and I think that will benefit him.
Yeah, he's definitely got one of the most ready for the main roster bodies.
And I think that he, especially being, you know, 38, it's probably, you know, better. I would be happy to get him, you know, up there. I think that a lot of times the guys who, you know, Elias was somebody who I didn't think had a great gimmick in NXT. He's turned out to be very good on the main roster, in part because so much of NXT depends on the character development and the long-term investment of fans. And it's hard to, you know, whereas if you have somebody who doesn't necessarily have that, it's a lot easier to get over.
So the main event, what we all came to see, I think, or at least was definitely the most hyped match. I was very hyped for the women's match as well, but so many people had at least speculated this is, you know, the end of Undisputed Era. Obviously, the other big storyline going into it was Pat McAfee, who has just been, quite frankly, a marvel. And a natural at this. And people wanted to see, you know, okay, he's had a match, but can he, you know, can he really mix it up with the big boys? Because I think it's one thing to do a, you know, a WWE match. I'm not saying that's not extremely difficult, but I mean, I just couldn't imagine, you know, how scary it is to do a match like this, that, you know, that there's real risk, especially with the spots that he ended up doing. But it actually was the Undisputed Era again, coming through once again, proving that they are the War Games, you know, kings. I mean, honestly, they're the kings of, NXT just in general. And I got a few questions here. The first one is, do you remember an outsider? And I know, Sam, you mentioned one name that has done a better job coming into WWE. They didn't go through training. They didn't come up through indie promotions or anything. Because Pat McAfee I'm blown away. I think he could be like a world champion if he decided this is what he wanted to do.
So I'll throw the name out there that I did. And the only person that I could think of who came in there and from match one was impressive was Ronda Rousey. It's the only person I can think of. Kurt Angle is the closest, but even Angle took him a few months before he got everything. And he had about a year of training in OVW. And I just think, you know, Ronda obviously trained between before she
came. Yeah, I was going to say she has the fortunate circumstance of coming from combat sports, which tends to help.
Well, the other thing for Ronda is, I was telling Keith about this, that when part of doing judo is you learn how to fall. And the falls that you do are very similar to what I understand of wrestling bumps. So she had like an advantage there. Pat McAfee, I mean, and just Ronda was not as good of a talker as McAfee is.
Oh God, no.
No, there's very few guys in wrestling right now are as good of a talker as he is.
Do you guys hear, I think I sent you the tweet that CM Punk sent.
Yeah.
About how everyone, by the way, I actually want to take this opportunity I don't know about you, but I thought the commentary last night was not great.
No. I love Beth. She did not have her Beth. I mean, not Beth. I'm sorry. Why am I blanking on it? The female.
Yeah, Beth Phoenix, Beth. You're
okay.
Right.
Yeah, okay. I didn't think she was great. Even Barrett.
Even was Wade not, was like, yes.
Yeah, he was a little off.
Pat McAfee, one of the dirtiest players in the NFL.
Yes. He's a punter.
The punter, right.
It's like, come on, dude. Like, and, did you...
And there was a point where like Vic Joseph like kept talking about like now war games can begin when everyone got in there.
Right. And so it started like, when the match started, buddy.
Yeah, the match beyond starts when everyone gets in there. Like I know that's
a trust me, the match has started.
Right. Yeah, like, ask the guy going through tables and taking chair shots.
Ask Kyle and Pete who started this match. Trust me, they know when that match started.
Yeah, the match started. The other thing is like I don't know if you noticed this, but like they called Candace the poison pixie like 8,000 times. It was like Michael Cole saying it's boss time.
Or the vintage Viper. So before we move on from Pac, there's much more stuff I want to cover this. The two spots that he did, both the Swanton off the top of the cage. And honestly, I thought the more impressive thing was, and that's what I was telling Sam earlier, Ron.
Freaking moonsault.
Well, the back spring through the table where he went back 20 feet where they went up for the suplex spot. And, he got shoved from Cole. And what was most impressive to me, having seen, enough stuff now on the WWE Network, from training, I mean, both of them were textbook, like absolutely textbook. The way he went through that table, which was a brutal spot, he went head first, but he fell back exactly like you're supposed to. I mean, you see his body go out. He made sure he landed, on the upper part of his back. I mean, this guy is just a absolute natural at this all the way around.
And
I don't want to be one of those dudes, but I can't really say enough about this. Is the most to me like impressive. Like Sammy, I know you were saying Ronda. I think Pat's got it head and shoulders above, and that's just of course my opinion.
Well, especially with the mic, I think that's really what separates. Is like not only has he been good in the ring, he's an unbelievable talk.
He's been knockout on the mic.
Which, I mean, that's kind of like with Ronda. He's obviously, that's what his profession was. I mean, that's what he's been doing the last, 5-6 years since he retired. So it does make sense that, he can talk. But the in-ring stuff, I mean, I think a punter would be the last position in the NFL, maybe other than a field goal kicker, that you go, yeah, that guy could come in and wrestle and, have a good match.
It underscores, but like, the stuff that he does, like he has every right to come in and sort of take it easy. And he's coming in doing swanton for, no one caught him. Like that was a brutal spot.
I watched that three times. I said that to Cindy. I watched that three times. I'm like, no, he ate that.
Yeah.
She was like, no, he landed on the people. I'm like, no. Watch this again. He ate that.
I don't know who was in the front, but I was so worried that it sounded like his head hit one of their heads on the way down. But it is funny that it was almost like the sea party, because it was. They completely whiffed there. So my next takeaway from this match, I'm so excited that Pete Dunne's back. I thought he was the MVP of the match. I thought he was incredible. I think it's ridiculous. This is looks with, that like burnt Donald Trump tan. It's only enhanced his character, especially now that he's a heel. Who was y'all's MVP? Am I on the right track, or did you have somebody else?
I probably would go either Pete Dunne or Kyle O'Reilly, like either of those two.
The
guys that started the match. I mean, I get that, you get a lot of spots in there to rest or whatever, but you still have to do 40 minutes of this match.
And 20 was just straight up pandemonium.
Yeah. And like, I don't care if you get to get like a 3 minute straight breather laying down in the corner. You still got to get out there and do the rest of those spots. That's freaking amazing.
Yeah. I would go. I also, it's hard for me not to throw McAfee in there.
Oh, that's fair.
This is the first show in a long time that I thought, man, I wish they had a crowd.
Yeah.
Mm.
It just, especially for the men's war games, where I just like, I wish there was.
They would have lost their minds.
They would have lost their minds for McAfee, I think so.
So the worst spot of the night, Adam Cole being dropped on his ribs on that chair shot. And I don't know if he was selling it, but between the sound, watching like 10 replays where it looked like he went full force onto that chair, I hope he's okay.
I don't know if that was a sell.
I don't know what it was either.
It would not surprise me here if he cracked a couple of ribs.
I really appreciated one of the things I appreciated about the match. Also, just a little off topic, was that O'Reilly got the pin.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice little bit of symmetry, you know, because he lost the match to Pete Dunne in the ladder match. That's the hard part about like War Games matches, where I worry about, and this is something that old timers have talked about, like upping, you know, where you up the brutality, and there's a point where like you, those kinds of spots don't necessarily have the same resonance. And that's why I would like them to like maybe just let War Games be War Games, you know, right. Not chairs and tables and stuff, is to like have that so that you can build eventually. Cause I worry about it.
I do too. Because it, you know, when I say pandemonium, the last 20 minutes was a spot fest in the best way. And I mean, it was because you have so many good performers in the ring. It told a story, you know, it did a lot of cool stuff, it's like what Sam said, they keep upping it. And that's, I think, how you end up having that spot with Cole at the end with Dunn. And I mean, he really looked like he got hurt. So I think the biggest question moving forward from this is, where do you go with Undisputed Era? Like, I mean, I think most people would have predicted this would have not been the finish. Like, I think most people thought they either would have lost, one of them would have turned on, you know, each other. But instead, they're still a cohesive unit. You could argue more cohesive than ever. You could argue stronger than ever with, you know, the sum of their parts. Where do they go?
The only thing that I can see is maybe doing something where, you know, remember, the Shield didn't break up against Evolution. They broke up afterwards. Ooh, and that maybe something nice happened. Callback. Thank you. Maybe something happens with O'Reilly, but it's hard because, you know, the obvious turn, you don't want to break up Red Dragon, you know, Fish and O'Reilly, but the obvious thing is that O'Reilly is sort of pushing to become the man,
mm-hmm.
and Cole doesn't want to relinquish it.
That was the other thing I was thinking is, do we reshuffle the deck and does like Cole and Fish go tag, you know, go for the tag champions, and maybe Roddy, you know, actually I can't even
Roddy.
I like Roddy, but I can't see Roddy in the NXT title picture right now. It would kind of
make sense for him to turn too, as he was the, you know, last one to join the group and, you know, turned on his partners in War Games to kind of start this run with the four of them. I do think it would make sense if they're going to break them up to wait now until they get called up, because you can have them get called up, have a little run as a group, maybe, you know, take on the Hurt Business or something, have some kind of feud. And then eventually
Retribution.
I think what Sam, you know, said would be a great callback, that you basically have one of them, you know, make a deal with the devil and turn on his brothers, because, I mean, we've seen that time and time and time and time again in wrestling. And I think with performers with that kind of talent, it almost always works.
Here's one interesting thing is that what if they did sort of the New Day thing where they're like, we're not going to turn on each other, but like we all have other things we want to go forward with.
Do they get to do the Freebird rule too, where if they get called up, they're a tag team and, you know, they can mix in and out?
Good. I could see Roddy and, because remember that Roddy and Fish did tag together before, but they wanted to have Kyle turn on them. I mean, or, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Finn Balor, because remember he cut that promo from the Aleister Black Memorial Closet. Where he was like, team games are over, we're going back to, you know, focusing on the Prince. I'm just sort of curious what happens there.
Did I miss anything? Is there anything you guys want to discuss from the pay-per-view that we didn't kind of go over there?
No, I think we hit all of the pay-per-view. I was actually just remembering something, but I'm not going to even open my mouth about it until after we because it has nothing to do with NXT whatsoever.
Okay.
Well, we will be back later in this week for obviously our normal edition of Team Turnbuckle, where we will give out the superlatives for the week of wrestling. And again, we will be doing a year-end podcast sometime this month where we're going to give out, you know, match of the year, face of the year, heel of the year, a lot of the stuff that basically we do every week, but for the year, storyline of the year, et cetera. Ron, you got anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Just my usual official Ronell Tinsley, harvestcreditors.com. If you have any issues on your credit report, you want to get your credit score higher, looking to buy a new car or house, get at me, mention the Team Turnbuckle podcast, save $100 on starting your services, including the ability to write your living will, trust and power of attorney.
I'm just going to plug the usual IBN, all-star package, $5 a month. Pays for itself. Go for it. Support the brand. Download the podcast. It also plugs Steel Ring Post. I think that sooner or later we're going to have, sooner probably rather than later, we're going to have Jesse Duram, who does, he's a member of the group, and he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been posting articles, right?
I read his. Yeah.
Really good.
And Steel Ring Post is all the with Spandex Orphans. I think that at some point we'll also have the Real Birdman, who does, but yeah, I love doing this with you guys, and yeah, that's really.
So the only thing I want to add to that is just Team Turnbuckle has a Twitter page. It's at Team Turnbuckle. We have a Facebook group, Team Turnbuckle. If you're not a member of the IB Sports group on Facebook, you should join it. The IB also has a Twitter account, Instagram, and then finally the IB Sports podcast feed. You still have Alan doing the backdoor cover by himself while I am working on the weekly daily fantasy football podcast with Joe Matz. And we had another banger week. We had Corey Davis at 5,100. He scored 36 points. We gave you King Cote at 3,600. He scored 26 points. Joe had David Montgomery at, I think he was at 5,500. He scored 24 points. We are quite frankly on fire right now. So if you play daily fantasy, you should check it out. Not to mention RC's doing some cool podcasts. So if you subscribe to that, whether it be on Anchor, Spotify, or iTunes, all the podcasts show up. And again, we will be back later in the week for the normal edition of the Team Turnbuckle podcast. We will see. And I'm going to tell you after Friday, I doubt that Roman Reigns is not going to win the Roman Reigns Hill of the Week award, because man, that dude's throwing some smoke right now. But I am Chief Keith Fleming for Ravishing Ron L. Tinsley and Sam the Shooter Howe. We will see you guys soon.
Cut the music.